Hello, and welcome to the Reversing Diabetes with Delaine MD podcast. This is episode number 175, I believe. Today, we are going to talk about urges and cravings and desires and what causes them and how to reverse them or how to deal with them, not reverse them, but how to manage them in a way that doesn't create illness in your body. And of course, whenever I talk about creating illness in your body frequently, I am discussing creating diabetes in your body or too much insulin in your body. And that too much insulin leads to everything from prediabetes to diabetes to non-alcoholic fatty liver disease to dementia to polycystic ovarian syndrome to all these different diseases. It's even associated with hypertension. So normalizing this biology in your body is imperative to living a naturally healthy life, which is kind of what this podcast is about. So we're going to talk about that today, how to manage those cravings and those desires for foods that are really making us sick. Before we get started, a couple things. I always like to touch on the fact that if you are on medications, that you need to be very careful making these lifestyle modifications. Medications for type 2 diabetes specifically can override your body's ability to bring your blood sugar up if it gets too low. Those meds suppress that your body's natural innate ability to manage your blood sugars from getting too low. So when that happens and you're on meds, you may not be able to bring your blood sugars back up. That can get really, really dangerous. So if you're medicated and you're making these lifestyle changes, you really need to have a very frank conversation with your medical provider and let them know you're doing this. Let them know your goals. See if they're on board for helping you and being your, you know, support system through this, or at least your advocate or interested in going on this journey with you. Some doctors, and I've, you know, met a lot of doctors over a lifetime, and I don't want to demonize physicians at all or medical providers at all. I have yet to meet the one that's truly a demon. I've met some with maybe questionable bits of it manner, but nobody really wants to hurt their patients. Your doctor doesn't, your medical provider does not want to hurt you. It's just they have been taught to use a certain set of skills, and that looks like diagnosing and medicating diseases. That is all they know how to do. That is what they're going to do with you. That is what they think the best way is to do. And they're not malicious, okay? They're just doing what they know. If you have different goals, you're going to have to find a medical provider that has similar goals to what you want. So if you are medicated and you're making these these lifestyle modifications, please make sure you have a good conversation with your physician and you have a good relationship with the physician you are working with or the medical provider you're working with in order to be safe as you make these changes. When your blood sugars drop to a certain level, you are going to have to, you're going to have to learn how to come off those meds. You're going to have somebody to call to come off those medications. So I would highly recommend that you get on the phone with your doctor, let them know what you're going to do, and be very, very cautious with your medications as you make these lifestyle modifications. So that's the warning label on this podcast. I want to also mention there will be a 5-day session coming up in the end of December to start the new year off, to get everybody ready to go for the new year. There will be one for women and there will be one for men. There, I said it. I made the commitment. It's out there. It's going to be the week between Christmas and New Year's, and I will have the schedule out. But if you are interested, you can send me a message at Delaine@DelaineMD. The schedule will come out closer to that last week. If you are interested in that, send me a message and I will get you the information. I'll get you on the list. We'll get you set up. You'll be ready to go for the new year and start your new year in 2023, naturally healthy. It will be great. Okay. Somebody sent me a message, and actually through the Facebook group. So there's a Reversing Diabetes with Delaine MD Facebook group. If you're interested in joining, definitely find it and ask to join, and I'll get you approved and I'll get you in there. Also, follow me at DelaineMD on Facebook and on Instagram, because that's where I make a lot of announcements about things like these free 5-day sessions. So find those social media platforms, find me on those and follow me so you can hear all this information. Also, it's where I announce what time I'm doing the podcast each week. So although 8 o'clock on Wednesdays is seeming to be a pretty good time, so I may start just having that as a standing thing on the schedule. But either way, in the Facebook group, somebody asked me about A1Cs. And so I want to briefly clarify, take a few minutes to clarify what an A1C is and what it is going to do. Like, how is it going to be measured, what you can expect? So in hemoglobin A1C, hemoglobin is a molecule in your red blood cells that carries around oxygen to the various parts of your body. It works to onload oxygen from the lungs and offload oxygen at the tissue. There is, out of all the hemoglobin, there are different kind of flavors. So you're going to love this analogy. I always kind of liken it to candies, right? There are different kind of flavors of candies. You can have hot tamales, you can have Starbursts, you can have M&Ms, you can have, I don't know, I'm sure there are like those toffee butterscotch things, right? There's different types of candies. There are different types of hemoglobin. One of those types of hemoglobin is called the A1C component. That A1C component of the hemoglobin, or that fraction of your hemoglobin, will bind to sugar. It will get glycosylated, is what we call it. It will get sugar bound to it. That fraction should be below a certain percentage of your hemoglobin. However, when we have so much, it should be below a certain percentage of your hemoglobin. However, when we have so much glucose in our system, it almost forces more hemoglobin to take on that sugar, to glycosylate, to get blood sugar bound to it. And so that's what we're measuring with a hemoglobin A1C, is how much, what percentage of your hemoglobin has been bound up to sugar, and that is able to be extrapolated into an average blood sugar. So the question was, how can I give myself an average A1C? How can I estimate my average A1C? I've just been using my fasting blood sugars. Is that enough? And what I want to offer you is, of course, the A1C is like taking a blood sugar every millisecond of every second of every minute of every hour of every day of every week of every month for 3 months, because that's how long your hemoglobin lives. Hemoglobin gets turned over every 90 days. So the hemoglobin A1C is looking at every single blood sugar, quote unquote, reading that you can get over 90 days. So it's really kind of hard to think we're going to estimate, although I do this, I'm guilty of estimating blood sugar or A1Cs off of like blood sugar readings, but recognize you are getting just a fraction of your readings, even if you're taking 5 readings a day, right? You're just getting a fraction of your blood sugar readings over that 90-day period. So what that means is, if you're only checking your fasting blood sugars, you are really only getting a picture of what happens in the fasting hours. You're not getting a picture of what happens after your meals. You're not getting a picture, especially if you're catching that cortisol effect in the morning, you're not getting a picture of like what else is going on other than that cortisol effect. So I would recommend like not trying to make an A1C estimation off of just the fasting blood sugars. I don't think that's going to work out well and give you an accurate representation. So that's kind of, I hope that clarifies kind of what that A1C is meant to be. That A1C is really truly like the most sophisticated estimation of your blood sugar, because it is literally a picture of every single moment of your day looking at your blood sugar. Okay. Versus what we're checking with our finger sticks is really more of a picture, okay? A snapshot in time, not looking at the entire estimate or the entire movie going on, essentially. Lastly, if you are going to make an estimation, using a continuous glucose monitor is probably going to give you a more accurate representation than a single finger stick, because the continuous glucose monitor is measuring your glucose, or can be, depending on the technology and the device you're using, can be measuring your blood sugar each and every moment of each and every day. So I hope that helps. Mary, that was for you. I hope that that helps your answer the question that you had about A1C estimations. So let's dive in today. Let's talk about cravings and urges. My animals are clearly to take over. Usually I mute that out. Okay, my animals are trying to take over today. My cat is about to jump in my lap. I'm wearing black. I really don't want the cat on me. And you can see my dogs. If you're listening, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see my dogs having their little wrestling match back here. So I apologize if my dogs get too rowdy. All right, so let's talk about cravings and let's talk about urges and desires and kind of what, why it happens, why they're so strong, and what we need to do to reverse them, but how do we need to manage over time when we don't meet our urges and our desires and our cravings for food that make us sick? We definitely see them diminish. They aren't as strong. And I'm going to talk about the science of why this happens. I'm going to also talk about what really causes your urges and desires. It is not what we think it is. Everybody thinks that our urges and desires are caused by the food that we're eating. And I am going to talk about the effect of dopamine in the brain that is leading to some of this, but I want you to realize that it is not the thing that's causing it. Okay. So let's talk a bit about processed foods. Most people are aware that one of the strategies that I recommend for reversing your type 2 diabetes, one of the main strategies I would offer, the cornerstone of reversing your type 2 diabetes, is not eating foods that are making you sick. My dogs are being ornery. Not eating foods that are making you sick. And what I mean by not eating foods that are making you sick is really not eating foods that are creating a lot of insulin in your system. Okay. So when I talk about not creating that insulin in your system, it means not eating the processed foods. And if you go to the ADA, they're going to tell you to eat whole grain breads and that's okay, that's good for diabetics. And what I want to offer you is that's probably not the case. Whole grain breads are probably not ideal for type 2 diabetics because they're processed. So remember, when we process foods, we alter their normal nutrient, their carbohydrate to protein to fat ratio gets altered. When that happens, we typically concentrate the carbohydrate component of the food. I was trying to think, and I actually went through this in a couple different webinars in the last couple weeks, and I was trying to think of when is the time that we concentrate something other than carbohydrates. And what I came up with was olive oil. When we actually press olives, we concentrate the fat, but that's the only time I can think of when we process foods and we concentrate something other than the carbohydrate component. And remember, the carbohydrate component, when we eat that, we get a huge surge of insulin in our system. That insulin goes up, that insulin drives insulin resistance. Insulin resistance is the root cause of type 2 diabetes. So when we eat processed foods, we're concentrating that carbohydrate component. That concentrated carbohydrate component gives us a surge of insulin. In addition to that, the carbohydrate also binds to receptors in our brain that release dopamine into our brain. So when we eat foods in their natural form, the way the earth makes it for us, right? When I eat a strawberry, when I eat a cucumber or some other carbohydrate, I'm sending them downstairs.
Go.
Instead of listening to my dogs wrestling behind me the whole time, I just sent them downstairs. I apologize. My dogs are ruling the house here. I apologize. So what happens is those carbohydrates, again, whether it's cucumber, whether it's carrot, whether it's strawberry, they bind a receptor in our brain that releases dopamine. And the purpose of this was 10,000 years ago, of course, we needed some strategy to incentivize human beings to take the risk to go and hunt and gather. Okay. So when we think of dopamine, a lot of people want to talk about dopamine as a feel-good hormone. And I think there is some element of feel-goodedness with it. But more than feel-goodedness, what happens when we have dopamine released in our brain is that we are motivated to repeat a behavior. That is really what dopamine is about. And so a lot of behaviors that may have been risky or that may have been accepting a certain amount of risk back pre-modern times, of course, those behaviors had to be motivated or incentivized because they kept us alive. So eating is a great example, right? Like I always joke around, eating 10,000 years ago was a dangerous thing. It was not as safe as just going and getting in your car and putting your seatbelt on with all your airbags and driving to the store where the FDA has approved the food that you're going to eat, make sure that you're safe and there's standards and blah, 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 blah. You buy the food, you get back in your car, seatbelt on, airbags, you drive home, you eat your safe food, right? Like that pre-modern was not what hunting and gathering was. That was not what eating food was. In pre-modern times, you had to get out of the cave. You might have gotten bit by an insect that could kill you. You might have gotten bit by a snake that could kill you. You could have fallen off of something while you were going to kill a beast to eat. You could have stabbed yourself or hurt yourself, and then that could get infected. I mean, like, hunting and gathering was a dangerous task pre-modern. Getting our food was dangerous pre-modern. So we had to be incentivized to take the risk because you had to eat in order to survive, right? So this is this dopamine system. When we eat food, we get a release of dopamine into our brain, and that makes us motivated, incentivized to go and do that behavior again, okay? So when we eat foods in their natural form, we get a natural release of dopamine into our system. Okay, into our brain. It's a natural release. It gives us a natural emphasis, like a reasonable emphasis on the behavior and the food that we ate. And it causes a natural desire to have that food, to repeat that behavior. You eat it, you eat the food in a way that serves your body, gives you nutrient, and then you get a dopamine release, right? So you have this natural cycle, right? When you eat a strawberry, it is important to remember the strawberry grows behind that tree, by that rock. That's where the strawberry is. I'll go back and get them. The way the earth provides strawberries for us is not the way the grocery store provides strawberries for us. The earth provides strawberries for us by having a bush with berries on it, and you eat the berries. And then when the bush is empty of berries, you have no more berries to eat. You can't overconsume strawberries or grapes or any other really high carb food. Maybe honey could be overconsumed, but even if you look at the statistics, like if you look at tribes or communities that eat a lot of honey, humans that eat a lot of honey, even them eating in the natural form, actually they're not diabetic, they're healthy, they're all these things, right? The other thing about honey to remember, because again, honey is pretty concentrated in carbohydrates, but the other thing to remember about honey is that the earth makes it, guarded by stinging creatures that make it kind of uncomfortable to get to the honey. So, and again, you get this dopamine release. And 10,000 years ago, it was really important to have these high carbohydrate foods because they were high energy foods, and energy was not overly available. Like, energy was scarce. So we had to be really highly incentivized to eat those foods. And so you actually do get more dopamine released with honey and strawberries and grapes and bananas than you would with cucumbers or carrots, and certainly more than you would with meat and fish, and certainly more than you would with fat. Like, that's just the way our brain has developed, and it's because it served our survival. So if you think about modern times and these foods that create type 2 diabetes. I'm not talking about bananas, and you guys know how I feel about this. Like, nobody got diabetes from their banana problem. That was not the issue. Okay. It's these processed foods, these unnatural foods, these refined foods that create our type 2 diabetes. So if you think about taking natural foods, sugar, flour is another great example, right? Like, you take wheat stalks from the ground, and then we process them. And what we do when we process them is we remove the fiber, we pulverize the stalk, and we make it into flour. And then we combine it with all these other foods, and we bake it, and we put it in a bag and put it on the shelf. We have artificially concentrated the carbohydrate that comes from the natural food of wheat. Okay. When we get that artificially concentrated food and we eat it, our brain then gets a concentrated release of dopamine. We get a higher release of dopamine, which causes a higher motivation, incentivization to eat that food again. So suddenly our brain is overemphasizing the importance of that food, which then leads to an overdesire, overcraving for those specific foods. And because we overdesire and we overcrave them, and they're overly available to us, we overeat them. And that overeating by quantity alone leads to a higher release of dopamine in our brain, creating more of a snowball effect than this gentle cycle that just keeps us alive in the world, right? It doesn't just keep us alive. It now is an overconsumption of something and actually creates a disease. Okay, so that's the neurochemistry that happens in our brain that creates us over desiring foods that literally are making us sick. It's very, and you've heard me say this, and I know it sounds a little hyperbolic, and that's okay, just humor me for a moment. But certainly this is very similar to having a drug addiction, because there is nowhere that we get the neurochemistry that occurs in our brain when we use illicit drugs. There's nowhere we get that in nature. That is not a natural experience for the human being. And the human being's brain has not evolved, and I don't know that it ever will because these things kill us. It's not evolved to manage that neurochemical response. It's the same thing with these foods. There's nowhere in nature that we get this huge surge of dopamine into our brain. And our bodies, our brains have not developed, have not evolved to manage that. Okay. And I'm talking about bread in this example. I am not even talking about Snickers bars or sodas and their high fructose corn syrups. Those things give you, those things give you a huge surge of dopamine into your brain. And that dopamine heavily motivates you to repeat the behavior. So when we see this happening, like, what triggers this? Like, how is it sometimes I'm fine and sometimes I really am just jonesing for this food that makes me sick? Many times what happens is we have an intense emotion. And so, I mean, I say intense, but sometimes it's not that intense. My emotion that really drew me or like really caused me to have all the desire and craving and urges for M&Ms was not heated embarrassment or debilitating sadness or intense anxiety, although those probably also did. My emotion that really drove this behavior for me was boredom. Boredom sounds so insignificant. Like, why couldn't I just handle being bored? But that was the emotion that was tied to this dopamine surge that created this heavy motor. It was a dopamine surge in the first point that creates a repeat motivation, like a motivation to repeat the behavior whenever I felt bored. So if you have an emotion that you typically eat with, and you eat something that's super highly concentrated, and you're getting yourself a surge of dopamine into your brain, when you feel that emotion in the future, your brain is going to heavily motivate you by this mechanism of dopamine to repeat that behavior. Okay. So that is where these urges and desires get into this cycle that just seems so hard to break. Okay. We all believe, like what I just told you, is a bunch of science about why our brain craves and desires these foods that make us sick. I know, I just told you this. Come back to me for a moment, because what I want you to hear from me, it is the thought that you have about the foods make you want the food, period, end of sentence. It is not the food itself. And the way that you know this, I know you're like, but no, you just told me a bunch of science. I can't help it. And I want you to know that's not the truth. That is not the truth. Because whether you're eating Wheat Thins crackers or whether you're eating bread and maybe pizza, or whether you're eating hot tamales, or whether you're eating Starbursts, or whether you're eating Hershey's Kisses, or whether you're eating M&Ms. All of those foods create a surge of dopamine, and a nearly, probably not exactly equivalent, but create a surge of dopamine in the same magnitude that we're talking about here, that creates this unnatural desire, this unnatural focus on the food. All of those foods do that. But I will tell you, where I might lose my marbles and eat pounds and pounds of M&Ms, although the thought of that literally makes me nauseous right now, but there was a time where that was a reality. In that same time where that was a reality, hot tamales were never going to be something I lost my marbles on. I was never going to eat hot tamales, ever. And do you know why? Because I don't think hot tamales are amazing. What I think what my thoughts are is that M&Ms are amazing. I love those little suckers. They're power pellets. They're amazing. Just another one. Those thoughts are what drove me to desire in an emotional way, not a biochemical motivation, right? In an emotional way, desire M&Ms. It never happened with hot tamales, ever. In fact, I could pass up hot tamales all day long. Starburst, similar. Like, I mean, they were okay, whatever, like tasted good, but I didn't jones for them. I didn't want them all the time. M&Ms were my thing. Hershey's Kisses were my thing. Twix bars were my thing. It was the chocolate, right? So what I want to offer to you is, yes, there is this biochemical experience going on, but far more powerful than that biochemistry, because that biochemistry happens with hot tamales, Starburst, or M&Ms. Far more powerful than that biochemistry is your belief about the food, your belief about the tasty treat, your belief about the thing that you love, quote unquote. Okay. The reason that it's important to see that is because that's where you have the most agency to change what's going on. One, it is more powerful than the biology. And two, it's where you have the most agency to change. You are never going to change the way the mu receptor works in your brain to release dopamine in response to carbohydrate intake. You're not going to be able to change that biology. What you can change is your belief about it. So the recommended strategy that I give for folks when they have these strong pulls towards food, I just can't seem to walk away from the donuts. I just can't seem to not eat the thing. What I recommend for people, for my clients, is that you stop telling yourself only the story that it tastes good. I stopped with the M&Ms telling myself, which is probably why now even the thought of eating pounds of M&Ms makes me a little nauseous. Because over years, I have reprogrammed my brain to where the story that comes is not only that they taste good. They do taste good for a moment. They really do. In addition to that, I get a stomach upset. In addition to that, I feel lethargic. Because once you get that initial burst of dopamine, suddenly there's no more dopamine in those neurons. There's no more because it all got thrown out with the first surge of your M&Ms. And for me, for my M&Ms, you got all the dopamine cashed out in that first surge. And now there's no more to release even in a baseline fashion to keep you motivated and kind of functional through the day. Now you feel like you're in this dopamine depression because there's no more out there. And you actually have to wait for your brain to reproduce dopamine in order for you to just get that baseline level of dopamine that should be in your brain all the time. Okay. The higher the surge of dopamine released, so right, like what you get released with a carrot or with a strawberry is much less, just because the carbohydrate content in there, the processed carbohydrate availability that's in those foods is different than what's in M&Ms. The M&Ms cause you to release all that dopamine in one shot, versus the carrots and the strawberries will cause a higher surge of dopamine to be released, but not all of it to be expended at once, right? When you do that with the M&Ms, you're going to keep eating the M&Ms with the hopes of getting that surge of dopamine again. This is what I call, we'll eat the first 1 to 2 bites. The first 1 to 2, maybe 3 bites of any tasty treat is the best. It's always going to be the best. And this is biochemically driven. Okay. It will always be the best. After that, you're just chasing those first 1, 2 to 3 bites. I always say, I joke around in the group. I'm like, you're going to eat one donut and it's going to be amazing. The first 2 to 3 bites are going to be amazing. And you're going to finish the entire box of donuts chasing those first 2 to 3 bites. And it's because of how this dopamine effect works. You get this huge surge of dopamine, and then you're heavily motivated to repeat the behavior, hoping that you're going to get that huge surge of dopamine again, but there's no more dopamine to be released because you expended it all in those first 2 to 3 bites. Okay. So this is where the drive to eat those foods are so heavy and why we keep eating them and can't seem to stop. Okay. It's this dopamine effect, but do understand it's your belief about the specific food that is really creating this behavior, because it doesn't happen with every tasty processed refined carbohydrate out there, right? Some people love Triscuits. I can't even get my head around that. It's like eating cardboard, but people love them. Okay. The carbohydrate effect in my brain is the same as in your brain. The difference is I don't think they taste that good. I just don't like them. I would rather spend the X number of carbs on M&Ms or some kind of chocolate treat, right? So your belief is still the more powerful thing here, still more powerful than the dopamine. Telling yourself the entire story about the food is how you start to get some wiggle room on that belief, okay? Telling myself initially that eating all the M&Ms were going to make me sick was not necessarily going to create me not wanting the M&Ms. But it did give me the truth of the thing. Like, oh, it's going to make me sick. And I'm making the decision to eat all the M&Ms anyway. I'm making the decision to make myself sick. That's step one of a 20-step process, right? Oh, it might make me sick, but I'm going to eat less of them. That's like step three or four, right? And it became for me, at least, and I'm not sure how your journey will work. That's what coaching helps you figure out. But for me, it became, I don't eat in a way that makes me sick anymore. That I don't do that to myself anymore. I value me more than to eat in a way that makes me feel crappy. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't, like, the holiday just passed and I had tasty treats, but I didn't eat them to the point that I got sick because I don't do that anymore. Like, that's just not something I do. I don't do it in a way that makes me nauseous and stomachache sick. I don't do it in a way that creates type 2 diabetes anymore either. So if you have any questions about this, please send me a message, Delaine@DelaineMD.com. If you're interested in coaching, if this you're like, oh my God, yes, this is it. This is the issue. This is what I need to get fixed. If you're interested in investing in you and fixing this issue finally, once and for all, that's what my coaching group is for. Send me a message, Delaine@DelaineMD.com. We'll get you set up for a consult. You'll see how the group works. We'll get you started and get you on the way to fixing your type 2 diabetes and really turning this around permanently. If you're interested in the 5-day session at the end of the month, send me a message, Delaine@DelaineMD.com. I'll teach you the strategies during those 5 days for reversing your type 2 diabetes and how to collect the information and look at it so you can start 2023 ready to go, make 2023 the last year you're dealing with diabetes. If you have any questions about what I've spoken about in this podcast, the information I've presented, please let me know. Again, you can always send me a message, Delaine@DelaineMD.com. And if you're getting success from these strategies that I teach, send me a message. I love hearing the success stories. I share them frequently. And I typically will share, not always, but I will typically share stories of people who have just listened to the podcast and fixed this. And not because I don't want you to sign up for my group. I certainly do. And if you want to make it easier, I think my group does make it easier. But more than that, I want you to know you do not have to be diabetic. You can fix this. This is totally fixable and people do it all the time. And I want people to hear that story. So if that's your story, let me know. I'm dying to hear it. All right. I will be back.